This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday. Hope you're having a fabulous weekend. I am looking at my weather app right now, and it says 72 degrees. It could not be a more perfect day for baseball here at Wrayfield Field. White Sox getting set to take on the Seattle Mariners in the second of their three games here at Wrayfield Field. White Sox currently in the midst of their longest homestand of the season, which they began last night. Unfortunately, it did not go the White Sox way. But again, this is the longest homestand of the season for the White Sox. Mariners in for three. Off day on Monday. The Royals will come in for three. And then after that, next weekend, it will be the Crosstown Series against rival Chicago Cubs, who don't seem to lose baseball games anymore. So it should be a fun weekend next weekend. It looks like a perfect afternoon for baseball this evening, which first pitch coming your way at 6:10 tonight, of course, officially. Our pregame coverage will start at 5:30. But as I always like to say on a Saturday, you're in the middle of White Sox Weekly. It's just extended pregame coverage of White Sox, of course. And we're expecting to have a conversation with Martin in about 15 minutes from right now, right around 3:45. Cannot wait for that. That should be fantastic because, of course, Davis Martin is in the middle of the most dominant stretch of his career as he is just absolute nails for the White Sox so far this year. He has been ridiculous. Anybody who I think thought that Davis Martin was capable of what he's been able to do right now would be lying to you because he has gone to a level where very few pitchers in baseball history have been able to do what he's done over this first seven starts. And the White Sox could not have asked for anything more from Davis Martin so far. So hoping to have a conversation with him again in about 15 minutes from right now. And we will do that here. Also, we'll let you hear from Chris Getz in full form later in the show. But I do want to let you hear from White Sox manager Will Venable and Chris Getz in short form here because I think what they had to say yesterday was, I would say, emblematic of how a lot of White Sox fans are probably feeling right now. White Sox finished off their road trip 3-3 before they came home and lost the opener last night. Now, I will say 3-3, but it felt a little bit disappointing simply because the White Sox were in position to have a winning road trip in the final two games, had they taken one of the final two games against the Angels, but they were unable to do so. So that left me, at least as a White Sox fan, feeling a little bit disappointed. And I come back to the fact that even though I was disappointed with the White Sox dropping the series to the Angels and losing both those games, I am happy that I'm finally back, fully invested in the White Sox right now, living and dying with each and every game, because I think White Sox fans would agree it hasn't felt that way the last couple of seasons. There had been lethargy setting in, I think, amongst the fan base because the White Sox have been losing a lot of games over the last couple of seasons, and for the White Sox to play as well as they have here early, and especially when you consider them bouncing back from a pretty tough start to the season when they began in Milwaukee and then in Miami, went 1-5, and it definitely felt like the White Sox had taken a bit of a step back from the steps forward that they had made at the end of last season. But to bounce back and have a good stretch run here over the last 3 or 4 weeks here, they are 17-21 on the season after 38 games. That is 7 games better than they were last season when they were 10-28 after 38. And 10-28 in 2024 as well, 13-25 in 2023. So no matter how you slice it, they have definitely taken a step forward, and it feels like if the White Sox continue to build on what they've established here so far, we can finally put the 100-loss seasons on the back burner and now start to talk about them setting their sights on at least a 500 record, and maybe if they can carry that deeper into the season, we can actually have conversations about being in the AL Central race, believe it or not. Will Venable, yesterday, talked about the White Sox being a good team.
Yeah, I think we've learned a lot. I think fair to say that we're a good team. You know, that these guys, when you break down the components of what a team is, you watch the way these guys communicate, the way that they train, they work together, they understand their roles and responsibilities, hold each other accountable. They're a really good team, you know, and you know, we're excited that that, you know, kind of creates a belief that we can go out and win a ball game tonight. And this series, like every series, feel like in this league, will be a great challenge for us.
Adding on to that, Chris Getz, White Sox general manager, talked a little bit yesterday about how the team has turned some heads from around the league. They've improved their play. And, you know, are there realistic conversations now about them competing in the American League Central?
We feel like we can contend. We feel like we can win series. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, you know, at all. Like you know, we're just going to stay at it.
Balancing the big picture with the small day-to-day, is there any extra frustration Tuesday? You guys had an opportunity to move into first place with a win just because of what your divisional rivals did. So is that just an irrelevant mile marker on May 8th to be in first place? Or is it something where you'd be like, you know what, we can puff out our chests a little bit?
Well, I don't want to get to the point where we're puffing out our chest. And I can promise you that'll never happen. However, when you take any loss, I mean, it's frustrating. That one, we felt like we could have won that game and we didn't. And I know that there was an added benefit of looking up. Okay, that's you know, positioning ourselves better than we were, you know, the day before, the nights before. So, but we just want to stay focused. I mean, I've talked about Will and his, you know, pathway to victory. Regardless of what happens the night before, you want to show up the next day and find solutions to you know, winning ball games, and we're just going to continue to do that. And if we continue to stack good days on top of each other, we feel like we're going to continue to make, you know, steps forward.
They obviously need to bounce back from last night's result because the White Sox did lose 12-8, but there was an interesting moment that occurred in the bottom of the first yesterday when Munetaka Murakami, who continues to, it seems like with every other day, something happens. Munetaka Murakami provides another home run that is setting some sort of record, and yesterday was no exception.
This is an incredible note. He has homered in the opener of 7 consecutive series. Only one other player has ever done that, and he takes outside. Eddie Murray in 1987. No player has ever homered in the first game of 8 consecutive series. 1-0. Swing and a fly ball. Well hit. Left field, and he's done it! It's a great 8, and it's number 15 overall. 1-0 in the first.
If you talk about it, it will happen.
Unfortunately, not everything we talk about happens, because Len and DJ were both looking for the White Sox to mount a huge comeback last night. They did actually mount a comeback after trailing 5-1 at one point to make it 5-5. Unfortunately, the Mariners busted out the hitting sticks last night. Luke Rayleigh not only launched a grand slam in the top of the third, but he added a 3-run homer in the top of the seventh as he hit 2 home runs and drove in 7 in the Mariners' 12-8 victory over the White Sox last night. Despite that, though, one other thing from Chris Getz here, talking about the changing mentality potentially at the trade deadline for the White Sox as an organization if they continue to play well.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge. If we're there, I mean, that'll be, I will welcome that. I assure you, though, that we're not going to lose sight of the big picture here. We're not. We knew going into 2026, we were going to make a meaningful step in the right direction. We wanted to really feel it by year's end. And there's a way to do that without, you know, making significant moves at a trade deadline or, you know, really any level of acquisition. But It's never been about 2026. It hasn't. And more than anything, we feel good about where we're at. I can't say that we're completely satisfied because, you lose a game and you're frustrated and a series may get away from you. That mindset won't change. But we just want to continue to develop players and help us win ball games.
Again, Chris Getz talking yesterday about the changing landscape for the White Sox as they continue to play better baseball this season. Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the post-game concert package. The winner will receive two tickets to this season's post-game concerts featuring Marshmello, Ja Rule, and Cole Swindell, plus tickets to the White Sox home games leading up to each concert. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. When we come back, expected to have a conversation with White Sox ace Davis Martin right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
0-2, swing and a miss, strike three. Trying to do it again. Swing and a miss, strike three. Good start. Swung on and missed by Neto. He has struck out again. 5 Ks through 10 batters for Martin. Football teams do that.
Yeah.
Called strike three on a cutter.
Boy, I love it. Davis Martin started walking off the mound as if to say, next.
The pitch, swing and a miss. On a low slider, strike three. He's got 8 strikeouts. Swing and a miss. Frazier strikes out. That's 9 for Martin. The pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Davis Martin with 10 strikeouts. First time in his career. He's hit double digits.
7 shutout innings on Monday night. And as you heard there from Len Casper and Darren Jackson, a career-high 10 strikeouts for Davis Martin, who's been absolutely brilliant all season long. Welcome to Meller Live at Raid Field on what is a picturesque afternoon as we get set for a 6:10 first pitch coming your way right here on ESPN 1000. Our pleasure right now to be joined by the longest tenured White Sox player. That is Davis Martin. Davis, can you believe it when I say the longest tenured player at this point in your career? Does it feel like that?
No, I think if you go back and I think about 2022 when I got optioned 8 times, that I was going to be the longest tenured out of that team is pretty crazy to think about.
You know what? It amuses me that you say when I got optioned 8 times. That's just the life of a baseball player, especially a pitcher sometimes these days. You know, and honestly, it's kind of crazy. How did you get from that point where you're just trying to break through into the majors, establish yourself? You obviously had to deal with Tommy John surgery as well. But then to get to this point, like, do you look back sometimes and say, wow, I feel good about the journey that I've taken to get to this spot?
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, I think any time, like, I look back and reflect on, you know, how far my journey personally has been, it's been crazy to think about, you know, just all the breaks that needed to happen and all the things that needed to go right to get where we are. And, you know, it's a crazy thing. And you talk about just God's plan for me, and it's been really cool to see. And it's nuts, to be honest.
So Davis Martin, we played your strikeout montage coming back from Monday night against the Angels. First of all, I guess, let me ask you, do you know what's the most strikeouts you've ever had in baseball? Obviously in the majors we know it's 10, but usually pitchers who have had the ability to get to this spot have had some dominant runs, whether it be in high school or even little league. What's the most you've ever struck out in a game?
I believe it was 17 or 18 my senior year of high school.
All right, so you've done this a time or two, but it had to feel pretty good just being locked in like you were the other night. Was that, in your opinion, the best pitching performance you've had in the majors?
I mean, I think results-wise, yes, for sure. I mean, I think you look at just, you know, the execution. Obviously, the results were phenomenal, and getting the team win at 6-0 there was awesome. But, yeah, I mean, it was one of the more fun ones. You know, you look around and you're just like, I need to start enjoying this one because this is one of those outings where, you know, it feels like everything might go right. So, it was a lot of fun.
So you were – it was a rematch of some sorts because you were squaring off against Jose Soriano, who – you know, prior to you guys getting to him the last couple of starts, was having the best start ever by a starting pitcher, and I'm not even being hyperbolic, Davis, because he was carrying that .24 ERA into his start, his first start against you guys. Then you guys scored three off of him, and then his last time out, you guys put five on him. Was there any little extra motivation for you going into that game knowing that you were going up against one of the best pitchers in baseball?
I don't think motivation, but I definitely think, you know, there's a little bit more nerves. There's a little bit more, you know, focus. You're just like, you almost have to feel like you have to be perfect, you know, which I thought sometimes isn't great for me. So, like, I was just trying to, you know, control what I could control. And, you know, our offense did a great job against them and put ourselves in a really good chance to win. And so all I was trying to focus on was getting our offense back in. Obviously, they saw something with them that we were seeing guys back in there and continue to score some more runs. But you can't talk about dominance without putting Soriano in that conversation. You know, just what he's done this year so far, his stuff, the changes in his arsenals that he's made. It's gonna be a great year for him.
So it's interesting you bring up the changing of his arsenal. Obviously, you've been in the majors for a little while now, and you've been someone who likes to tinker a little bit, constantly kind of changing your arsenal. What's been the difference for you this season? Why so much success? Is it just about your approach with your pitch sequences, or is there something more that goes with it?
I think twofold. I think, you know, mentally, I think I'm in a really good spot. You know, I think where I'm at mentally, I'm freed up to just go out and compete and you know, not have fear of failure and just go out and have fun. And this team is really good. It's a good, really good background for that. I mean, it's hard not to, you know, you're trying to be serious in the dugout and then Mune hits a home run and everybody's just like, you know, going crazy in the dugout. It's hard not to just laugh and have fun. And so this team has really kind of been a good support system for me, just to be out there and compete and kind of just be yourself and not have to feel like you have to be anybody that you're not. And that's been a great first step. And then secondly, just throwing everything for strikes, right? Just trying to be in the zone with as many pitches as I can and, you know, throw stuff off of each other and kind of move stuff around, but just trying to be unpredictable.
Davis Martin joining me here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN Chicago. Davis, you mentioned, you know, just being light in the clubhouse. And is it a bit of a relief this year where it doesn't seem like every game you're, you know, day in and day out, you're dealing with tough results where the team is finally on the right path?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, no one wants to come to the yard every day and feel like they don't have a chance to win. And, you know, I think that's the difference between this year and years past probably is that, you know, we feel like we have a roster that can go play with anybody. And, you know, the games that we let slip away, I feel like it's more of our doing. And so, you know, we're continually trying to work on that and continue to get better, continue to sharpen our edges. And we're still a young team that needs to learn how to win in the big league. So there's still some things that we need to clean up. And but overall, like, I think we have a roster that's competitive and that wants to win and that believes they can win.
All right. So you mentioned, you know, Mooney homering, and then obviously everyone in the dugout gets excited. You had a chance to get to know him a little bit in spring training, but of course the World Baseball Classic interrupted that a little bit. At what point did you say to yourself, wow, this guy's pretty special?
You know, I think just without even looking at what he was doing on the baseball field, just like what he was doing in his day in and day out routine was one of the more impressive things that I've ever seen. I tell everybody all the time, I rarely see the guy sitting in his locker. He's always doing something, either swim, you know, work in the cages, prep work in the weight room. You know, he's working with Yoshi and just kind of getting everything figured out every day. Like, it's truly it's kind of a masterpiece to watch. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, like, this is every day. The consistency, the routine is just copy and paste every single day, regardless of results the prior day. You know, if he hit two home runs or went 0-for-4, you know, it's just his consistency is incredible. And I think it's a great, you know, example to set for some of the younger guys and some of the younger hitters to show, like, hey, this is, if you want to be great, this is what you need to do. And so I think that's been the most impressive thing for me, and is just his work ethic and his routine.
Not to mention, Davis, I mean, coming over here and doing what he's doing right now in an entirely new country, that in itself is just, you have to give him all the credit in the world for being able to adjust as quickly as he has, you know, coming over from Japan to the United States as well.
100%. I mean, I think the zone control has been phenomenal. Like, the walks have been great. He's seeing pitches well. And when he gets pitches to hit, you know, he's doing a lot of damage. And You know, he's a fun teammate to be around, man. He wants to be involved. He wants, like, everybody wants to talk to him, and he wants to talk to us. And it's just, it seems like it's been a seamless transition from the acquisition to now. And I think it's only going to get closer, and this team's only going to get closer.
Tell me a little bit about what it's been like throwing to Drew Romo, who's caught you for the last couple of starts and, by the way, supplied a couple of home runs for you in your start a couple starts ago. What's it been like throwing to him and getting to know him here so quickly?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, that's the fun part about a battery is that, you know, sometimes you're throwing to one guy and next week you're throwing to someone else. And, you know, Drew and I don't think we even threw together at all in spring training. So, the first outing was kind of like, hey, this is kind of what I do. This is kind of what I like to do. And, but again, looking at what he does, I mean, he's talking about video. He's been watching. He has his notebook. He has all the information, you know, all the scouting that he's done. And then I have all the scouting that I've done and kind of mesh that together and feel like we have a really good plan going into each game. And the communication on the bench to make adjustments, in the game is great. But and yeah, obviously the two home runs from both sides of the plate is just awesome. And it was a great night for him. And he's just been great for the team. And he's been a great dude in the clubhouse.
Well, I mean, especially when the scouting report is not necessarily that he's somebody who can power up. I'm not saying that he can't, but the book on him, you know, at least coming through the minors, was that he was more of a contact type hitter. So to see him have some power here in the early going has been fun for White Sox fans, no doubt about it. Davis Martin joining me for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. So, Davis, you're pitching tomorrow. I saw that you were out today with the ACE program, you and Eric Fetty, doing some work, which had to be pretty cool. I know your wife Jenna was there. With tomorrow being Mother's Day, but you being on the mound, do you get a pack morning because you're on the mound? Do you make good tomorrow evening? What's the plan for Mother's Day with your wife in attendance? Or I don't know if she's coming to the game, or what's the plan?
Yeah, she's, I mean, that's great. Like every morning, I mean, I love to be around her and my son, and it's a great way to start my day, regardless of if it's a start or not. And, you know, I think talking about, you know, Mother's Day or not, it's just, that's what we do in the morning if I'm starting. Like, I just want to be around them, and they help me take my mind off the game and make me realize what's important in life. And then obviously she's a competitor. She played volleyball in college. So, she loves competing just as much as I do. So, it's fun, you know, post game, we usually talk about the game a little bit and how it went and things of that nature. But, you know, I got some plans. I got her some gifts, and but yeah, I mean, she deserves all the credit in the world. I don't think any gifts ever going to be enough for her. Just what she's done for my career personally, and for my son. She's an incredible mother, and I for sure know that I would not be here without her. So, yeah, she deserves plenty of celebration.
Love it. You're the longest tenured White Sox player, but you also sound like a savvy vet when it comes to marriage. That's very cool, Davis. One last thing. Coming up in July, 13th, 14th, and 15th, I know a lot of times players plan to get away. Have you wrapped your mind around the possibility of potentially heading to Philadelphia on July 13th, 14th, and 15th for the All-Star break?
No, not at all. I'm just doing my job. I talked about it with Sean today. You know, he just got done with his last start, and, you know, we joked about it. We're like, we're on a chapter 9. You know, it's just like we're trying to take it, you know, every 5 days, one at a time, doing everything you can in that 5 days to prep for the team in front of you. And, you know, we're doing a disservice to our own team if we're trying to look that far in advance. We got a lot of baseball left, and, you know, my job is just to stay as present as possible, try to do everything I can to get better for the team today, and, you know, take it one day at a time. And, you know, God willing, if I'm in Philadelphia, that's great. That's awesome, you know, for sure. But right now it's not even close to my radar.
Well, listen, your approach has been magnificent all season long. I'll be the one to go ahead and trumpet it for you. But I think you can just, you know, get it on the calendar as a possibility that you might want to just be prepared for that, because I think you have a very good shot of doing it. Davis, we appreciate you hopping on White Sox Weekly today, and can't wait to watch you go at it tomorrow as well.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Davis Martin, again, he's been rock solid all season long for the White Sox, better than rock solid, 5-1 with that 1.64 ERA, an absolute ace fronting the White Sox rotation so far this season. We're going to take a quick timeout, but before we do that, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox fans, the Crosstown Series is coming to the South Side. Grab your friends and family and head to Wright Field Friday, May 15th through Sunday, May 17th. That is next weekend, folks, and cheer on your White Sox. Great lower-level tickets are still available. To purchase your Crosstown Series tickets, visit whitesox.com/tickets. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, I'll let you hear from some stars in the White Sox minor league organization who have had an interesting week, to say the least. We'll do that right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
Pitch high in the air and deep to left field. Moylan back at the wall. He looks up. If it's fair, it's gone. And it is a fair ball onto the roof of the club lounge. Caleb Bonnemer with his 12th home run of the season, a fastball low that caught a bit of the plate, and he crushed it. The 1-1. Into the air to deep left field by Bonnemer through the smoky haze. Moylan back, and this one is gone. 13th of the year for Caleb Bonnemer as he pokes that one over the wall in left field, and the Dash make it a 2-0 lead on the solo home run.
Don't look now, but White Sox fans are getting extremely excited about what Caleb Bonnemer is doing at Class High A Winston-Salem for the Dash. He was named the South Atlantic League Player of the Week for April 28th through May 3rd. He hit .348 with a .516 on base and a .913 slug. Hit four homers during that time. That last homer you heard actually was not included over that time period. Bonnemer leads the White Sox minor league organization with 13 home runs. He has been just absolutely destroying baseballs, including his 12th home run of the season, which you heard leading off. And that was off of Garrett Cole earlier this week. Surprisingly, after homering and singling in Bonnemer's third at bat against Garrett Cole, Cole will say, I don't know, I'm sure Garrett Cole would say got away from him, but he clearly had had enough of Caleb Bonnemer, and he hit with a baseball. He got hit by a pitch from Garrett Cole, and it hit him in the numbers after homering and singling. So that was interesting. But nevertheless, Caleb Bonnemer, no sweat off his back. He'll just continue to go around crushing baseballs. And again, he has been an absolute revelation. And I think White Sox fans who are extremely excited, we've seen both Sam Antonacci and Noah Schultz come up and make immediate impacts here at the major league level. I know lots of White Sox fans are extremely excited about Braden Montgomery, who just this past week debuted at AAA. He received a promotion from AA. And then, of course, Hagen Smith, who was named the White Sox Minor League Pitcher of the Month for March, April. So there's lots to continue to be excited about, but Caleb Bonnemer seems to really be breaking through this season, and that is why we're going to let you hear from not just Bonnemer and Hagen Smith, but also Colby Shelton as well here coming up in just a moment. Caleb Bonnemer talked about why he's had so much success here in the early going.
Yeah, that was definitely pretty cool. The first one, the oppo homer, that one felt pretty good because that was my first career opposite field homer. Then the other two, luckily was able to get some good pitches to hit, put some good swings on them. The third one was pretty cool too, just to tie up the game in the ninth, and just everything that happened in that game. It was a pretty cool moment.
And just what was your off season like as far as the work that you were able to put on end that kind of put you in a position to have this start that you've had so far this year?
Yeah, like I said before, pretty much just trying to kind of replicate what I was able to do last year. Pretty much just try to get bigger and stronger, not really change too much with my swing or anything. Just get stronger in the weight room. Just kind of keep honing in the things mechanically with my swing that have been working. And that's pretty much it.
You mentioned like you're not
doing different things with your swing. So how do you kind of process, you know, hitting almost as many home runs as you hit last year in the first month so far? Do you feel like it's added strength, or what is even going through your mind as you're going through this run right now?
Yeah, honestly, I do. I think it's a lot to do with, just added strength. I mean, I put on a good amount of weight in the off season, getting stronger, swinging the bat faster. And I also think just kind of having a full year under my belt, just a little bit more wise and some things that with my approach. Overall, I think just the biggest thing was, just getting stronger.
You've generally dominated fastballs throughout the past two seasons, last year in Kannapolis and now in Winston as well. How do you feel like you have adjusted to seeing, a little bit higher quality breaking stuff here so far this season?
Yeah, I think that's another thing I could probably get better at, just breaking balls. I think part of that is also kind of what we were talking about before, being able to kind of catch a fastball a little bit deeper and shoot it the other way. And I think a lot of it also is just chase. There's kind of a combination of a few things that I would like to get better at. I think at the end of the day, I like to now hitting the fastball is my strength. So I feel like if I'm on the heater, good things happen.
I guess, how have you reacted to seeing more breaking balls? Since I imagine, with especially the way, the power is playing right now, you might be getting pitched in a more evasive fashion than even last year. Not that you weren't having a good year last year, but do you notice kind of both pitchers' approaches changing to you a little bit based on, power production, and also in turn yours having to change a little bit as a result?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely certain teams throw a lot more breaking balls. And I think the biggest thing for me was, or has been, just trying not to chase. Cause that's where a lot of the breaking balls are. They're just strike the balls that they're trying to get me to chase on. So I feel like if I can just shut down on those, hopefully eventually I'll get a good pitch to hit, and do some damage with it. But I think the biggest thing is just trying to cut down chase on the breaking balls.
So that was Caleb Bonnemer. I know I mentioned that he was named the South Atlantic League Player of the Week. I think I failed to mention, though, that he was named the White Sox hitter, minor league hitter of the month. So, and that goes without saying, but he's been absolutely awesome as he started out talking about his 3-home run game, which actually coincidentally came on the same night that Drew Romo hit his first 2 career home runs. Bonnemer actually one-upped him. Granted, it wasn't in the majors, but Bonnemer had 3 that night for the Dash. Hagen Smith, he is in AAA pitching for the Knights, and he's made 7 starts so far this season. Now, he's only pitched 22 and a third innings. I think part of that is the White Sox are diligently being aware that he's somebody who they expect to, at some point this season, receive a promotion to the majors. And then the hope is, I think, that as the season progresses, the White Sox won't necessarily have to limit his innings because they're kind of slow playing it right now at the beginning of the year. That's why Hagen Smith has only thrown 22 and a third innings in his first 7 starts. But in those 22-plus innings, he's gone with a 2.82 ERA. He's struck out 32 hitters. Now, the one chink in his armor right now, if you had to say, is 16 walks right now for Hagen Smith that he needs to improve upon. If that's probably the last real step he needs to take in order to actually receive the promotion, to be more consistent in the strike zone and kind of stay away from those free passes. If he can do that, I won't be surprised if we see him up here at right field in no time. But again, that's probably the biggest obstacle he needs to overcome right now, because he's very difficult for minor league hitters to hit and see well. So he's obviously striking out. The opponents are only hitting 156 off of him. And again, he needs to be a little bit more consistent in the strike zone to finally receive that call to the show. Hagen Smith, though, talked about being named the White Sox minor league pitcher of the month.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to get that honor. Couldn't have done it without the staff that we have here, and the teammates we have here. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've thrown the ball decent. There's definitely some stuff I'd like to do a little better, but, just carry on to this month and keep getting better every day.
What is the stuff that you're focusing on and kind of getting better at right now?
Just attacking hitters a little better. There'd be some at bats where just kind of get ball behind and try to work behind. And I think just getting ahead early just helped me a lot.
I know they've kind of slow played building you up just in terms of building up in terms of like innings length. How would you compare where you feel now, like compared to like a normal season? Is it still kind of feel a little bit like end of spring or ramping up, or does it feel like you're kind of ready to go for more?
Yeah, I feel really good right now. Definitely ready to go for more, but obviously we have a plan set in place. And, you know, whenever that time comes, I'll be ready for it. I'm excited for it as well.
Hey, you mentioned some of those areas that you want to keep on working on, but what are some of those things that over this first month, like, all right, this is what I've been working on, and these things have been very, have worked for me so far this season?
Yeah, like we talked about adding the cutter and changeup into the repertoire. I mean, the change has been there, but it's more defined this year. And, you know, just really just mixing all the pitches, giving everybody different looks. I feel like my slider has been really good this year so far. So that's been really good for me just to be able to know that in the back of my head that I can throw that whenever for a strike or a strikeout. And it's been really good.
Hagan, you know, you look at your career totals and teams very rarely, it seems like, really square you up. You know, you don't give up much hits. You've walked a few guys. Do you feel like that's something that just comes kind of with development? It, like you said, as you're refining things, adding things in, that the control is going to get sharper as you go?
Yeah, for 100%. Obviously, that's not where I want it to be right now. But, you know, as we go and throw more innings, get more comfortable, just face more hitters, I think that's definitely going to come. I'm not worried about that at all. Stuff feels really good. And, you know, just keep attacking hitters the way that I want to. And I think that'll clean itself up.
Is that the most important thing? Obviously, I mean, you got just the stuff feeling good. Everything else will kind of come as you go.
100%. You know, just keep going, doing my stuff daily, attacking the way I want to, the hitters, and I think that would clean itself up.
What's it been like to watch Noah, the start he's gotten off to in Chicago? Have you been watching him at all? Does it look like same old Noah? Does it seem like he's taking a step forward? What kind of spurs into you that when you're able to see him doing his thing in Chicago?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, super excited when he got the call. We were all in there just congratulating him and just trying to watch some of his starts. I've watched a few or a couple, and sometimes they play so late that I wanted to go to bed, and I kind of like watch the YouTube highlights after of him throw. But yeah, he's been throwing the ball awesome. Super happy for him, and he's going to keep doing his thing.
Again, that was Hagan Smith earlier this week after he was named the White Sox Minor League Pitcher of the Month. One more minor leaguer to highlight for you, Colby Shelton, who is actually the double play combo with Caleb Bonnemer down at Winston-Salem. Colby Shelton absolutely crushing it. He's hitting .343. That is an organization high with his batting average so far. He's also got an on-base percentage of .470 and a slug of .648. That's right. So that is an OPS of 1118, folks. Six homers, 26 RBIs. He has been just scorching hot to begin his high A career at Winston-Salem. Colby Shelton talked about getting off to a hot start.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great month of baseball. I mean, just all the work that's gone in this off season, just a little byproduct of that. And just super grateful for the opportunity I had to be in Winston-Salem. And yeah, that's kind of really it. Just a bunch of hard work this off season and kind of showing up a little bit in this past month.
What's it kind of been like just being part of the White Sox organization since you've been there? What have you kind of learned and what's kind of been the process?
Yeah, I mean, super grateful for the opportunity to be part of the organization. I think we got a bunch of good things going on. I mean, hitting wise, I've learned a lot. Spring training, everything from kind of like hitting with a plan, and then just all the cage work stuff that we do, just putting us in a challenging environment. So when it comes to game time, it makes it a little easier because all these pitchers throw very hard with different shapes. So just the different challenging stuff we do in the cages to just translate over the game to make it more comfortable at the dish.
Good. You mentioned kind of putting the ball in play as an emphasis. How do you feel like you've, or maybe better suited now to, you know, put the ball in play a lot, you know, with the sort of power and impact that you've shown earlier in your career? It seems like you've blended like the two things you done well kind of at the same time right now.
Yeah, I would just say it makes you, no matter who it is, it just makes you a more complete hitter. You just got options. Make the defense work, and when you put the ball in play, you get on base more and make the defense work. So it just leads to getting on base more, and getting on base more leads to more runs, and the more runs leads to more wins. So any way to help the team win.
You talk about things you've learned in the White Sox organization. I think the emphasis you put on is kind of like difficult practice environments or facing difficult pitches in the cage. Is that something you had done before, or how do you feel like that's enhanced, you know, what your approach is at the plate?
Yeah, I mean, I've done some stuff in the past like it, but not in this depth. I mean, our new minor league hitting coordinator has been great, Sherman Johnson, and then to our director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, and then our hitting coach in Winston, all the other coaches we got have been great with just getting us prepared and putting us in uncomfortable environments to get us ready for the game, to go out there and put us in the best spot for success.
Well, what were some of those things that you kind of learned last year that have sort of helped you sort of going on through this season so far as well?
Yeah, I mean, last year I was in Kannapolis shortly for a little bit after the draft, struggled quite a bit, but I feel like that experience that I was out there was very eye-opening and helped me. It's going to help me in the long run. I mean, just learning, playing 6 days a week and the failure helped me get into a routine that I can have success for. And then ultimately, like, baseball is super hard. You're going to fail. And I feel like those struggles that past year kind of helped me put my ego aside a little bit and get back to work and like, okay, like this is, I mean, not baseball's easy at all, but this is a grind. Like, it's going to take everything I got. So I felt like it set me up for success in the long run, just because I had a little taste of pro ball and not in a kind of a bad way, just because I failed so much and no one likes to fail, but it's definitely helped me out at the start of this year, just getting into a good routine and getting prepared and putting myself in the best spot to have success every night.
And Kobe, I know it's a month, but when you're hitting over 400 and you're having that much success, what's that feeling like when you're up there? It's got to be a pretty darn good. It's not, as people say, it's not easy to hit the baseball. So what's it feel like when you're on that kind of run?
Yeah, it's definitely very cool. I mean, yeah, like those runs, you don't hit 400. It's very rare you hit 400 through a season. So, I mean, when you're going well, it's a very good feeling, very rewarding. And I just think it reflects some of the hard work and stuff that a lot of people don't see behind the scenes between players, coaches, all that stuff.
Colby Shelton there. Now, he was a mid-round pick and not necessarily a highly touted player, so I'll be interested to see just where he moves up on the rotational prospect list, because after as well as he's been hitting, and he had some success in his college career at Florida. At times, he was definitely more of a power hitter, and he changed his approach a little bit to be a little bit more consistent with the contact. So it's curious now that he's in professional baseball how he will really develop as a player. Hey, Sox fans, join us for City Connect Fridays all season long. Catch the team in their iconic uniforms every Friday night and shop the full collection at the team store. For more information, head to whitesox.com/city. When we come back, I will get you some information regarding the White Sox lineup today. We had a scratch that I will tell you about when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Legendary AM 1000, the home of the Chicago White Sox.
Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Memorial Day, May 25th, as the White Sox take on the Twins at 1:10. 10,000 fans at the ballpark will receive a Chase Mydroth bobblehead presented by the Village of Bedford Park. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Now, Chase, he is in the lineup tonight. not scratched. But Andrew Benintendi, who was originally in the White Sox lineup as the designated hitter, has been scratched from today's lineup. Sam Antonacci is in left field leading off. He's left-handed. Munetaka Murakami, the lefty Japanese slugger, plays first base and bats second. Miguel Vargas will play third and bat third. Colson Montgomery, your left-handed hitting shortstop, cleans up. Chase Mydroth, as I mentioned, at second base, hitting fifth. Jared Kelnick is in right field. He's left-handed as well. Tristan Peters in center field tonight. Randall Grichuk DHing. And then Edgar Caro, the switch-hitting catcher, rounds out Will Venable's lineup for tonight. For the Mariners, it will be Rob Refsnyder leading off in right field. Cal Raleigh switch-hitting DH tonight, not catching. Julio Rodriguez plays center field and bats third. Josh Naylor just never stops wearing out the White Sox. He hit a homer last night. The lefty first baseman cleans up. Randy Arozarena is in left field batting fifth. J.P. Crawford, the lefty hitting shortstop, bats sixth. Mitch Garver behind the plate bats seventh. Cole Young, left-handed second baseman, batting eighth. And then Leo Rivas, the switch hitting third baseman, bats ninth for Dan Wilson's Mariners. When we come back, no hyperbole here. My absolute favorite follow on social media joins us next, right here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly on a picturesque afternoon. Absolutely perfect day here at the ballpark, 72 degrees. First pitch coming your way at 6:10 this evening. We'll officially begin our pregame coverage at 5:30 tonight. But as I always like to say, Saturday, you're just in the middle of extended White Sox pregame coverage on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, and right now it is my absolute pleasure to welcome in our next guest. And when I say I am not being hyperbolic at all, I legitimately believe that this next guest is my absolute favorite follow on social media. And that is absolutely, again, I am not blowing smoke. I absolutely adore this account, and I'm going to bring him in now. And when I say his name, I have a feeling that absolutely nobody is going to know who I'm talking about. But I don't think he's going to be offended because I think he's used to this. LJ Rader, who I think most people are more familiar with as the man who is responsible for the social media account Art But Make It Sports. He joins us now right here on White Sox Weekly. You're not offended when I bring you in like that, LJ, are you?
No, not at all. I try to stay anonymous, so... For the longest time, no one even knew who I was.
Yeah. Sure, no, I think that's actually the best of both worlds, is that you have a very popular following on social media that I think most people adore, as I do. But you also get to stay somewhat anonymous, at least I believe. Now, maybe the more public you are, the more interviews you do, maybe it's not going to be as much that way in the future. But nevertheless, my pleasure to bring you on. And there is a hook to why we're having you on White Sox Weekly, because you're actually going to be in town next Friday at the Art Institute of Chicago giving a speech as you are in the throes of promotion for your newest book that was released not too recently.
Yeah. The account has turned in from social media into something that you can actually hold in your hand, which is pretty exciting. Not something that I ever thought would happen. And as part of that, been going around to museums. Honestly, the one I'm probably the most excited about is the Art Institute. So I'll be there Friday, 2 p.m. I think there's still a handful of tickets still available. It's free to come. Going to be there giving a talk and then having a panel conversation with myself, a woman who works at the museum, and then a sports photographer. So should be a really good time.
Okay, LJ, so why is the Art Institute of Chicago one of the ones that you're most looking forward to going to?
Yeah, it's a pillar. Mm-hmm. And museums that cover all forms of art tend to get me the most excited. If I can, you know, step in and, you know, take photos of artwork from, you know, the 1400s up to, you know, a handful of years back, whenever I can leave and have that sort of full timeline, is kind of a treasure trove. And I don't know, I kind of, you know, grow up, you watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and it's just sort of this iconic institution. So,
You know what? This is shame on me, LJ, because obviously a terrible job as a host here. I bring you in. I immediately say how nobody knows who you are. And then I don't even make it clear who you are. I just assume that everybody like me follows art, but make it sports. They should be. But if they're not, we should give them the Cliff's Notes version. And I'm sure most sports fans have seen it by now, but just in case there's a few folks out there listening who aren't big into social media, what LJ does on his feed is he takes images from sporting events, usually big ones that are occurring and anything that's basically trending, and he will, with virtually, I think you've talked about it, but what seems like a photographic memory, you will produce a photo of an image of an artwork that basically, I always say this, I'm not lying when I say this, I've texted, I have a group chat with friends, we've texted numerous times about your images that you've posted, and I frequently say, never misses, because you do a fantastic job of finding, so I think for most people who are following on social media, an obscure piece of art that we may not be familiar with, and then aligning the image so that it feels like it's a perfect replica of a sports image. LJ, how did this begin, and how did it become as big as it has become?
Yeah, honestly, mostly boredom. End of 2019, start of 2020 with the pandemic, so not a lot going on, and kind of locked up, and would be posting sort of my mindless musings of comparing art to sports and sort of seeing art through a sports lens to my personal Instagram account. And I was kind of friends to turn it into its own thing. And for about a year, it was kind of posting into the abyss. It's just like my friends, my mom, her friends were the only ones following, which was fine. It was just kind of like an outlet to kill time. And then people started to take notice, and it would see sort of these different jumps anytime people would say, you know, follow this account, and flash forward to now, and it's got like over a million people across different platforms that are following, which is super cool. But I try to sort of, regardless of how, you know, how many people are tuning in, kind of just maintain that same editorial bar and just sort of post, because it's what I enjoy doing.
Listen, like I said, you constantly amaze me with what you throw out there. LJ Rader, he is the man who is responsible for the account Art But Make It Sports on your social feeds. LJ, so how does the process come about? How do you just have like this photographic memory of all these pieces of art? How did this come about where you're able to just with your, and because I know there are some folks out there who are familiar with your account who are like, there's no way this is not AI related. I know that's something that I think it has to be in some ways flattering for you that when people say that, but at the same time, it also is like, hey, I do this for real.
Yeah. I would encourage people to, you should come to the talk at the Art Institute, because I'll probably stick around after, and you can throw images at me, and I can just do them live, and then you'll see that I'm a real person and not using AI. Yeah, I have, I guess, a kind of photographic memory, at least of artwork and mm-hmm. sort of pattern recognition. And I go all over the world. I had the luxury of being able to travel for work and usually tack on an extra day to go see the museums in whichever city I'm in. And I'll photograph them. And then I have a massive folder on my phone that I tend to kind of memorize through, and that has helped me learn certain themes in art history and certain artist styles. So sometimes if I see an image and I don't know the exact artwork to compare it to, I might say, you know, this looks like such and such's, you know, work, and then I'll look through that artist's work. And those are honestly the ones that are more exciting. If I can, you know, use my knowledge of art history that I've sort of taught myself to come up with a pairing. And yeah, usually something comes together, and I try to post every day. I've been a little bit busy recently, but whenever there are big events or, you know, on the White Sox side, on the Pope last year, when that was a big thing, sort of anything that's viral in the sports world, I love to latch on to.
No, it makes all the sense in the world. Again, LJ Rader, he is the man who manages the Art But Make It Sports social media feed. LJ, so you're going to be in town giving this speech at the Art Institute of Chicago next Friday. But if I'm correct, you're also going to be doing something with the White Sox here at Wright Field the evening before on that Thursday. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I think I'll be on the field, I think, doing some lineup cards pregame. I think it's emo night, too, okay. Which is funny. So we'll think about how we tie that in. And then I'll probably be making some live posts and maybe throwing them on the big screen. So actually last night I was in Worcester with the Woo Sox. They had a big art theme night, and they were sending me photos during the game, and we were putting them up on the Jumbotron. And I think it was super fun for the fans to kind of see some of those in-game moments get turned into art live. So I imagine, yeah, probably something that looks like that next week, but obviously White Sox themed.
No, it'll be cool. We'll have to try and connect, because I'll obviously be at the ballpark that night. We'll just so we can meet in person, but you're going to be here. So you're going to have to, you mentioned it, the Pope, section 140, that is where the White Sox have the commemorative graphic mural just outside of that section commemorating the Pope and, you know, him being in attendance for the World Series for the White Sox back in 2005, Pope Leo. So, I mean, I'll be honest, I think a man like you who loves art's going to go by that mural and say, you know what, this is great and all, I love that you guys are commemorating it, but this isn't the real stuff, man. Like, you know, I love the actual, you know, paint on there, not a graphic mural. I think you're gonna be amused in some ways by the mural at the section 140 when you see it live in person here.
I'll definitely have to go check that out.
All right, LJ, so as we wrap it up here on White Sox Weekly, is there any personal favorite that you have of, like, when you put an image out in connection with a piece of art that you, for whatever reason, personal satisfaction or just the response you received, is there any one in particular? And I assume hopefully that it is in the book that you have, but is there any one in particular that you just look back fondly on as one of your favorites?
Yeah, there's a few. There's one that isn't in the book that is the famous Michael Jordan blue dunk I think was originally in Sports Illustrated back in the day that I compared to a painting by an artist named Clifford Still. If anybody's hearing this, just hit up the DMs. I'll send it to you. It's buried in the feed because I did it years ago. And then, yeah, in the book, obviously, like Willie Mays's famous catch. The book was fun too because it allowed me to go back and do photos that were, you know, that are famous, but mm-hmm. most of what I tackle on the day-to-day is things that are in the moment. And also it gave me that that leg room to, you know, weave in historic photos and obviously Willie Mays's catch. I'll let people go buy the book and they can check it out.
But that, yeah, no doubt about it. You know what, LJ, you should definitely, we'll connect, but send me it, and we'll make sure that our social feeds, ESPN 1000, tweets out what you're talking about, so that anybody who's listening, they probably follow us on the socials as well, so they could send those out. But LJ, cannot wait to have you in the ballpark and here in our city next weekend. Thanks so much for hopping on. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I guess maybe before I go, I'll shout out the White Sox. I'm the longtime player of the game called Out of the Park Baseball. It's like the super in-depth baseball simulation game. I've been playing for, like, God, 20-plus years now, which is crazy to think about. And I oftentimes run the White Sox in there. So love the team. Excited to be at the ballpark. And, yeah, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. And again, keep doing what you're doing, because you're honest to God, your feed is probably the main reason why during big sporting events I will keep that second screen handy, because I'm always fascinated to see what you provide. And I'm sure part of it is because I love art. And so you educating me on some fantastic stuff, just the way it weaves together. I can't say it more. They're probably not a bigger fan out there of your work. So keep on doing what you're doing. Love it. And can't wait to have you in the city next week. Thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Again, that is LJ Rader. He runs the Art But Make It Sports account on your social media feeds. Check it out. I'm sure, again, anybody who's a sports fan who's on social media is probably fairly familiar with it. But as I always like to say, it's just, you don't even have to appreciate art to recognize his skill at finding sports images and then matching them up with historical art. It is absolutely unbelievable to see him work. So I always appreciate checking out the stuff that he does. White Sox fans, create your perfect season with 10-ticket all-access pack. Get access to the Crosstown Series against the Cubs and choose your games and seats that work best for you and your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we lost a legend today from around the majors. We'll share that with you coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, weekdays, 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
White Sox fans, bring everyone out to the ballpark this season for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. Enjoy family-friendly activities, plus kids get to run the bases after the game. Tickets start at just $12. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Got some sad news today as we learned that Bobby Cox, the legendary Hall of Fame manager for the Atlanta Braves for that epic run throughout the 90s, died at the age of 4 today. Yeah, so just always tough when you lose a legend, of course, and what more can you say? Anybody who grew up during that time, like I did, when the Braves were amassing so many division crowns and constantly seemingly coming up ever so short for a World Series title until they eventually did win one under Bobby Cox. Again, he was eject. Well, I mean, I guess I probably shouldn't be leading with that, but one of his marks in the history of the game is that he was ejected more than any other manager in the history of baseball. And coincidentally, Brendan Riley, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, and I were talking about ejections in baseball earlier today and just how they're not really much of a thing nowadays. You don't see managers tossed much because of the challenge system that's now in place. We've got ABS. You can't really argue balls and strikes anymore because you just challenge if you don't like the call. And so the old lore of managers being ejected and coming out of the dugout and sparring verbally with the umpire to the point where you'd watch them go nose to nose and you'd see the spittle come out of a manager's mouth and fly into the umpire and then eventually be tossed, whether it was because the manager was actually upset about the call or maybe just because they were trying to motivate their team because they weren't happy with their performance. It was kind of a tool in a manager's toolkit to use when needed. And Bobby Cox was ejected 161 times, including 3 times during the postseason in his illustrious managerial career. He was the manager for the Braves and Blue Jays from 1978 through 2010, managed the Blue Jays first before, again, he went on that epic run with the Braves throughout the 90s, which was, of course, headed primarily by that pitching staff of Greg Maddux, John Smoltz, Tom Glavine, that trio, of course, but then for the early 90s, Steve Avery was that fourth starter in the rotation that oftentimes was thought of as one of the best pitching staffs ever assembled. And then after Steve Avery, after his career was winding down, the Braves added Kevin Millwood as the fourth man in that rotation. But it was always Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin, and Bobby Cox, along with his pitching coach, Leo Mazzoni, just synonymous with Braves baseball throughout the 90s. And you know what's crazy is Ted Turner just died this past week as well. Of course, the media mogul who bought the Braves and was the owner of the team for I think virtually, you know, the entire tenure of Bobby Cox's managerial career with the Braves. But yeah, so Ted Turner, who put the Braves on the Superstation on TBS and made them somewhat of a national team, similar to the way the Cubs were thought of with WGN. You had those two superstations that when cable TV was really taking off, they became two national teams because people around the world could watch their team, could watch those teams. And so all of a sudden you had people who became Braves fans because they could see. And that's why Bobby Cox, in addition to having so much success with that Braves team in the 90s, he was one of the most recognizable managers because the Braves were a great organization and they were available for all to see across the United States. So Bobby Cox, Hall of Fame manager, won a World Series with the Braves and really was, you know, driving force for that team, dies at the age of 84 today. Rest in peace, Bobby Cox. When we come back, I will let you hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz, who met with the assembled media yesterday before the game and talked about a wide-ranging variety of topics. We'll do that right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Sox fans, bring everyone out to the ballpark this season for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. Enjoy family-friendly activities, plus kids can run the bases after the game. Tickets start at just $12. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Jeff Miller back here on White Sox Weekly. White Sox general manager Chris Getz met with the media yesterday, and first things first, he was asked about an update regarding Kyle Teal.
Yeah, because it seems to be a big interest among fan base. Kyle Teal, what's the current status for him?
Yeah, he's running the bases this homestand. You know, the last couple days, actually the week, have been pretty productive. And, you know, now it's testing him on the bases and, you know, hoping and assuming that goes well, then we'll send him on his way to a rehab. So these next couple days are important ones.
And the last time he said when he got close, when you talked about it, he talked about it, it started grabbing on him a little bit, right? And we'll talk more about the recovery as much as anything else with him, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, when you're at those final stages, you know, you got to test it. You know, there needs to be thresholds that need to be met. Sometimes, some days there's going to be some setbacks and some soreness, you know, and that's just part of the recovery of it all. And you want to stack as many good days as you can on top of each other to, you know, once you get that response, you know that the body is handling that well and you can take steps forward. So, you know, look forward to you know, getting the feedback from this weekend and can take it from there.
Target would be Tuesday if it goes well.
It's possible.
Okay.
It's possible.
Given that he's been able to work off the trajectory.
Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
In-game, you know, at-bats probably a little bit quicker than you know, in the past when you just needed to, you know, face live at-bats. But with that being said, we know that there's so much more to this game than just standing in the box and facing your opponent. I mean, it's running the bases, and in his case, it's finding his rhythm behind the dish as well, and building that rapport with pitchers and syncing up, and you know, just getting those opportunities and feels that really you can't simulate other than games. So, you know, the layoff has been, you know, fairly significant. I mean, we're talking about this time in spring training on top of, you know, the early chunk of this season. So, you know, you take all areas of his game or anyone's game seriously. We want to make sure that he can come up here and, you know, play to his best of, you know, best abilities.
What did you guys like from Grichik when he made these signings?
Yeah, he's got experience, you know, the right-handed bat, you know, an ability to play, you know, the outfield, corner outfield. You know, we're looking to add weapons, you know, against lefties. You know, he could do more than that. But, you know, primarily when we're putting together lineups and trying to strengthen, you know, our group of hitters on a particular day or game with another right-handed hitter, it made sense for us to bring him in.
What's the biggest issue you saw from Jordan Leisure that needed a kind of a reset in Charlotte?
You know, I think, you know, we've seen what he's capable of doing. He's been an impact reliever here before. He's had stretches of doing really well, and then there's been some times where, you know, he gets a little out of sync. I think more than anything, it's getting more consistent with his slider. You know, both the command of it and the shape of it. I think that, you know, his fastball attack as well. You know, he's become, you know, very reliant on fastballs up. I think it would be, you know, it's important for him to still drive that fastball down to keep them honest. So there's a couple things to worry, you know, to work on. I would say, you know, his last couple outings were, you know, were promising. They were encouraging. This is an opportunity to bring in Trevor Richards, who's been throwing, you know, really well, both in AAA with Philly, and then when you pull up, you know, so often we're on the hunt to continue to add, you know, pitching and pitching depth. And, you know, we've used a lot of arms. And you know, in this case, let's bring Trevor Richards in. You know, he's an experienced arm that is seemingly throwing well right now. And it's an opportunity to send Jordan, you know, down and work on some things. So it's really about the entirety of the season and creating as much depth and quality arms that you can. And that's what motivated the move.
Have you been with what you've seen from Ryan Hudson?
He's been really good. You know, we saw a little bit of it last year, but he's taken his game to another level, and we've leaned on him in a lot of different moments of a game, and he's pitched some big innings for us. He's had some real quality outings. So, but you also don't want to overuse him and overtax. You know, that's you know, something that you're always mindful of. So, and some more weapons to, you know, that we're not overtaxing guys is certainly something that we focus on. But in his case currently, you know, he's gotten himself into the mix to, you know, you're looking for opportunities to pitch him because you know it's going to be a quality outing.
Is it fair to say that with the next evolution of Davis Martin and how he's pitching here, that there's something to be said for craft and not just stuff? If so, how does his development kind of factor into the player dev, you know, kind of through the system a little bit that you guys have structured?
Yeah, he continues to get better, and, you know, he uses all of his pitches. He uses one pitch to help, you know, his other pitches. I mean, he pounds the zone. He's pitched deep into games. You go back to, you know, when we drafted him and, you know, his early struggles in A-ball, and then I don't want to say reinventing himself, but tapping into, you know, even more. There was more into the tank. His velocity went up. He continued to improve his changeup and his slider. He's a guy that, you know, he's a true pro. He's always looking for ways to improve his game. You know, he's been through a Tommy John. He's become a leader, you know, amongst our pitching group. Very smart guy, hardworking. But he goes up there most importantly, and he posts, and he's had some really good outings for us. So, yeah, I think it speaks to, you know, just the development process that we've been able to provide internally. But most importantly, you know, you're looking at someone that never seems to be satisfied and has really become a quality starter for us and at the major league level.
Chris, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about Shane Smith, I think 2 weeks ago, making a rehab start down at Charlotte, and he seemed to be getting his act together and working on his mechanics. Now he's got this rotator cuff issue. What
were they all related before, or they or something did something new crop up?
Well, you know, he had been optioned. It wasn't a rehab. I mean, he was down there on option, but you know, it's something that had popped up. You know, he was down there working on some things, and sometimes when there's some tweaks to someone's mechanics through that, it can jolt the body a little bit, and perhaps that was the what happened here. Thankfully, we don't view it as a very serious flare up, but just something that is there, and we want to get it calmed down for a couple weeks and get him back. He had been making strides, you know, altogether and really taken to the you know, the assignment well. Unfortunately, there was a little bit of a flare up in the shoulder, and we hope to get that taken care of, and it seems to be heading in that right direction because we know he's really important for us.
Chris, we're a couple weeks away from no longer saying it's early, but based on your start and the start in the American League in general, how does it change anything that you do? Day-to-day, your outlook for the future, the trade deadline, like, does it change some things?
It really doesn't. Okay. You know, you're paying attention to what's going on always in baseball, whether it be in the American League, the R division, and, you know, we're tracking that, but that doesn't, you know, we're not losing sight of what we're building towards here. And, you know, I think more than anything, guys are continuing to progress and develop, you know, both at the minor league level and at the major league level, and they've taken advantage of these opportunities. You know, we just want to continue to play quality baseball, compete. I think, you know, really, if you just look at on a daily basis, on a nightly basis, we feel like we have a chance to win. And it's not like we didn't, you know, in the past, it was more, you almost needed to be perfect, you know, and now, you know, there's the lineup is deeper. You know, the rotation is deeper. We've got some weapons in the bullpen that will allow us to navigate and finish off games, and the defense has improved. But we just want to stay at it. You know, we'll see. We'll see where things go. You know, really happy with how some of our minor league players are playing right now, and you look at their development, and obviously the first pick gets this upcoming draft has gotten a lot of attention, and to be able to, an opportunity to add that level of talent into what we're doing is, you know, adds to the optimism and excitement. It's we felt really good about how we were going about things, and we all know that there's a lag to seeing it happen at the major league level, and now to get, you know, some glimpses into what we're capable of doing more on a regular basis than we were in the past is encouraging and exciting, and hopefully our fans you know, feel the same way about where this is headed. But most importantly, we just got to stay at it and make really sound decisions and continue to develop these players, and that's how we're going to separate ourselves. We're going to continue to add talent and continue to find ways to get these guys better. They're going to start feeding off of each other. They already are. We've been very intentional on who we're bringing into this clubhouse, and we're looking for winning type players that are focused on, you know, what do I got to do to help this team win? And that's starting to really, you know, seep into this organization as a whole, and really help clarify, you know, who we're targeting and any level of acquisition. So we feel like we're in a good spot. We've got an ability to maneuver at any point too. We've shown those capabilities, but we feel good at where things are at, and we're looking forward to this weekend against a really quality club, one of the top teams, you know, in the American League. They've proven that, and it's going to be a nice test for us.
So, following up, Jesse, I mean, do you think about 37 games in about can this team contend in a division that looks, you know, winnable overall?
I think we, you know, we feel like we can contend. We feel like we can win series. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, you know, at all. Like, you know, we're just going to
balance the big picture with the small day-to-day. Is there any extra frustration Tuesday? You guys had an opportunity to move into first place with a win just because of what your divisional rivals did. So is that just an irrelevant mile marker on May 8th to be in first place? Or is it something where you'd be like, you know what, we can puff out our chests a little bit?
Well, I don't want to get to the point where we're puffing out our chest. And I can promise you that'll never happen. However, when you take any loss, I mean, it's frustrating. That one, we felt like we could have won that game, and we didn't. And I know that there was an added benefit of looking up. Okay, that's you know, positioning ourselves better than we were you know, the day before or the nights before. So, but we just want to stay focused. I mean, I've talked about Will and his, you know, pathway to victory. Regardless of what happens the night before, you want to show up the next day and find solutions to you know, winning ball games. And we're just going to continue to do that. And if we continue to stack good days on top of each other, we feel like we're going to continue to make, you know, take steps forward.
That is White Sox General Manager Chris Getz meeting with the media yesterday. More from him to come here in a moment. Join us at the ballpark Saturday, June 13th, for Sox Crawl Fiesta on 35th Street, presented by Trace Agaves. Enjoy an exclusive pregame crawl inside the stadium with special $5 menu items, entertainment, and more. Plus, you get to receive a Colson Montgomery bobblehead presented by Rate. Fans must be 21 years and older to attend. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxCrawl. More from Chris Getz when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
White Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Saturday, May 30th, as the White Sox take on the Tigers at 110. 15,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive a Kyle Teal and Edgar Carroll bobblehead presented by Binney's Beverage Depot. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Here's a little bit more from White Sox General Manager Chris Getz yesterday.
Chris, it's mid-June, and you know, we were talking similarly about playoff spot or being a few games out. Does that, when it starts to shape your, you know, day-to-day of like, well, we have to prepare for the trade deadline and pick a direction a little bit? Like, I know you don't want to get too far ahead, but is there parts of the year where you kind of have to start thinking?
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge. If we're there, I mean, that'll be – I will welcome that. I assure you, though, that we're not going to lose sight of the big picture here. We're not. We knew going into 2026 we were going to make a meaningful step in the right direction. We wanted to really feel it by year's end. And there's a way to do that without, you know, making significant moves at a trade deadline or, you know, really any level of acquisition. But – it's never been about 2026. It hasn't. And more than anything, we feel good about where we're at. I can't say that we're completely satisfied because, you lose a game and you're frustrated and a series may get away from you. That mindset won't change. But we just want to continue to develop players and help us win ball games.
Chris, when you're in a room with your group and you're talking about where you're at as an organization, do you part of that is gauging where your organization's at compared to where the others are at right now, or is it mostly more just internal of what we continue to have to do? Because obviously all the questions have been about the feel good that your record's almost the same as everyone else.
Yeah, we're focused on continuing to improve the Chicago White Sox, and you know, naturally, you're going to pay attention to what other clubs are doing or not doing. But we more than anything, we're focused on what can we do to, you know, get Sean Burke well positioned to have a good start tonight and score some runs and play quality defense. And then, you know, a Caleb Bonimer and a Jaden Fowski and a Billy Carlson and getting Braden Montgomery comfortable at AAA, and he had a good game. You know, last night, and he seems to be getting settled in and getting, you know, our pitching depth back to where it was at the beginning of the year. And Sandlin starting tonight and in his second start at Charlotte, you know, and getting, you know, Tanner McDougal healthy and back on track. So that's what we're set out to do. You know, we're just continue to feed the process that we've established here, and we know that good things will come from that.
Well, a couple of starters going really well right now. Burke and Davis. Burke's on a nice run right now. What do you see from him?
Sean, you know, he's done a really nice job. You know, early on, you know, we've had some openers, and then we've done them. You know, we've had some starts without the openers, and he's had success doing both. And we'll continue to look for opportunities to both. You know, his first innings have improved, and that's been something that he's really prioritized and shown he's capable of getting settled in early. You know, it's really about his command it is, and he usually shows signs early on in his outing and what kind of outing you're going to get from him. But you know, we want him to give us six plus innings, and he's been able to put us in a position to win a lot of baseball games, and we look forward for him to have a good one again tonight.
Chris, Charlotte, got an update on William Regoia?
You know, he's continuing to rehab. Hasn't really been able to get over the hump. He still has some soreness in there, some nagging soreness. So, just going to try to get that better. You know, we're better as an organization having William Regoia healthy and playing. He got off to such a nice start. We've seen what he's capable of doing, both, you know, in the minor leagues this year and in spring training, and, you know, the high contact rate and his overall play, both defensively, base running. You know, his style of play fits in very well with what we're trying to do up here. So we certainly want to get him back. We just haven't been able to get there quite yet.
Chris, what surprised you more, Caleb Bonimer homering off a former Cy Young Award winner, or getting hit by a pitch two innings or a couple of at-bats later?
Well, I know last year he got hit in the face his first game, and he almost refused to leave the game. And I think he was back in there the following night or shortly thereafter. It just kind of speaks to kind of the gamer that he is. But he's a good player. He is, and you know, he plays the winning style of baseball that we're about here. And you know, it's fun to track him because he's going to be a good one up here.
Yeah, best for Herrera or Hayes.
Pardon me?
Relevant to the right-handed outfield pitchers with Herrera or Hayes, is there more of an idea of their timeline for either one of them?
Not exactly. They're both progressing well. You know, it's still fairly early in I guess, you know, their timeline of recovery, or at least the initial expectation. You know, so yeah, they're going to get it. You know, moving today and you see where they're at, but in terms of something more specific, don't have a whole lot to share.
Chris, with the tweaking that's taking place thus far in the lineup, do you feel that the success of this team so far has been that these guys have brought into their particular roles?
Yeah, I do think that they've got a pretty strong, you know, they've got a strong understanding of who they are and what it's going to be to take to put together quality at bats. We all know hitting can come and go, and sometimes feeding on each other can be a good thing, but also can be a hindrance sometimes. But some guys that can hit balls, we've got some guys that can really grind out at bats, and Sam Antonacci and Chase Mydroth, and then the middle of the lineup with, you know, whether it be Vargas and Colson and Mune. So there's a different style of at bat that you may get from time to time. Ultimately, it's really executing what they're capable of doing. And when they're doing that, we're scoring runs, and sometimes you get challenged with some different styles of pitching. But, you know, guys are hungry and they love to work, and you know, they're looking to put a beating on anyone on a nightly basis, and you don't want them to lose that mindset. We know it's never going to be easy, but these guys love to play, and they love to play with each other.
So Mune did a great month last month in May and in April. What do you expect in May?
Well, I hope he just continues to do what he's been doing, because, you know, he's been a really real force for us. And, you know, what he brings to the table, you know, the influence and the impact that he has on the lineup is significant. You know, we just want to continue to watch him have quality at bats. You know, get on base and do damage, and play his style of baseball. You know, so we want to do what we can to position him to do what he's been doing. He doesn't need to do anything more. You know, we know that the league is trying to figure him out, but he continues to show up and impress.
You expect him to get better? I mean, I know you're satisfied, but you expect with experience that he's going to get better.
I do. I you know, specifically, how's that going to show up? You know, I just, you look at his determination and his work ethic and his intelligence. I have a tough time thinking he's not going to get better.
You talk to other GMs a lot. Are guys giving you props for signing Burakami?
I've gotten some of those calls. As a matter of fact, I got a couple this week. So, and one GM said, "Congratulations, you beat the industry on this one." So, that was nice to hear. And you know, it's worked out, and you know, we feel you know, really excited about having him in a White Sox uniform, and he's helping us win baseball games.
Have you been impressed with how quickly Sam Antonacci has seemed to acclimate himself? And he's doing exactly what he was doing in the minor leagues, including getting hit by pitches to get on base.
You know, I'm really not surprised. I'm happy, but not surprised. You know, the evaluation on him, was that this was going to be transferable to the major league level. And we were right on that. And you know, he's a guy that shows up and you know, he plays hard and he plays with an edge, and he's just as excited about taking a walk than as getting a base hit. And love the way that he runs hard, you know, his 90s, his turns. He loves to put pressure, you know, on the other team. So I knew we weren't, you know, we knew we were going to see that. We knew that we were going to sense this competitive edge. Now he's been able to put together quality at bats, get big hits for us, get on base when we've needed it, and we expect that to hold.
Going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly. Thank you to Davis Martin and LJ Rader, the man who runs the Art Make It Sports social media accounts. I'm Jeff Meller. Stick around. Pre-game coverage for White Sox and Mariners coming your way next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.